Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of True Crime on Easy Street.
We're a little rusty. It's been 3 weeks.
Yeah, I was supposed to be doing the intro, and then I'm just staring at Scott, waiting on him to go. Well, probably waiting on you to interrupt the intro, because that
well,
is
there
your
you
favorite
go.
Thing.
Yeah. Mission but accomplished.
We are back. We've been battling sickness in the group. We're sorry for a revisit last week, but hope you enjoyed it. I'm Katie Givens. I'm not a lawyer.
Scott Wright, mediocre journalist.
Kelly Turner, not a doctor. Definitely wasn't. Last weekend when I was sick.
Ooh,
oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah. That's okay. We all took a little break.
Appreciate everybody working with me on that one.
Sure.
It was a rough weekend.
I didn't feel like getting out of bed anyway, so you actually solved a problem for me. I was going to have to get up soon.
Get two birds, right?
Yeah, big time. Cold enough for you guys?
I think it could get a little colder. We're not quite witch's tit yet.
If you're, it's close. I don't know.
I don't know.
Wind chill, I think it is. If you don't know, here in Northeast Alabama, it was 19 degrees last night, 7 with the wind chill.
Yeah.
And it's not much warmer than that now that the sun's out.
No, I think it feels like 9 outside.
My cat, Meow, insisted on staying out last night.
Really?
Yes. I opened the door and he looked at me and I looked at him and he looked at me and I said, that's it. You had your chance. And I slammed the door on him and he ran off into the woods.
Is he back this morning?
Yeah, he's fine.
Yep. Mine went out last night too.
Like, I don't get it.
Maybe the cold weather gets them moving more.
I guess. Or maybe everything else is asleep and they just pounce.
Well, they're just nocturnal animals. Yeah. So they just... And they have a fur coat.
Yeah.
At all times.
That's true.
Mine's getting a little heavy, so
needed the exercise.
He needs the exercise.
they're kind of built for the outside, but yeah, he might lose a little bit. Or he's putting on his weight to go outside.
Maybe
stay warm.
You guys have any shout outs?
I do not.
Ha! I got to do everything around here.
You do.
Yes.
It's your turn.
Courtney Ross Hudson reached out to us on Facebook a couple of weeks ago and she said, "Hey, you idiots." I'm paraphrasing, but that's kind of what she said.
I don't think she said it.
Sort of. She said, you guys should do an episode about the case of Eric, Cates, and Gypsy from Empire, Alabama.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So I did a little bit of digging, tiny bit, mediocre journalist that I am.
Yeah.
It's a good case. Okay. It's a murder case from Walker County. Eric Cates is a person, and Gypsy is his dog.
Walker County is rough.
And
they've always got some scandals.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, coming soon then.
Thanks
for the suggestion.
Absolutely.
And thank you for listening.
Mm-hmm. And if anybody wants to give us a suggestion, we take them more than you might think.
Yeah,
I
do.
I mean, we're always taking suggestions.
We have a very, very long list, and Scott always goes off the list.
That is true.
To do things like he's doing today.
Well, maybe if we rehearsed more.
We
never do. We tried that once.
It ended up being the worst episode. Well, maybe the second worst episode ever.
What was the worst one?
I don't know.
I
don't know. What do you
think? It was that one.
I think the audience has spoken.
Yeah, I think they have. I think we all know which one was the worst.
Yeah.
Comment if y'all remember.
Yeah, if you disagree, let us know. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys want to make
Scott's still oblivious, but go on.
I am. What are we talking about?
Nothing.
Okay. Anyway, make a gurgling sound. It's time for the Aon water cooler segment.
Gurgling? I don't think we have gurgling on the board.
Maybe that's not a good idea. Anyway, now Aon may send us a letter tomorrow and say, we don't want to be associated with you anymore, because this is sort of an editorial comment, a little kind of sort of, but I'm curious to know what you guys think when I'm finished. So we may get a cease and desist letter from Aon water coolers, but I think you guys will be on board.
Well,
they knew they were getting into it. When they signed on, right?
Yeah, they like the idea of the water cooler segment.
We'll see about that. I think this is going to be a great segment today.
Okay.
And I'm dying to know what you guys think. Okay, this is from the news, January the 5th of this year.
Okay. Oh, new, just recently.
Recently, a class action lawsuit accuses McDonald's of misleading customers.
Well,
the suit claims that the McRib sandwich does not actually contain any pork rib meat. The lawsuit says McDonald's is deceiving customers who, and I'm quoting here, reasonably, but mistakenly believe that a product named the McRib actually has any rib meat in it. That's unquote. The four plaintiffs allege the sandwich does not contain any rib meat, but instead is made from ground up portions of pork shoulder, pulverized heart, and hold on to your stomachs, scalded stomachs.
Okay. I had absolutely 100% no doubt that there was no rib meat in the McRib.
That's it.
Am I the only one?
No, I knew it. I think it's disgusting.
What are their injuries? What's the damage?
I don't know. I don't know how far it's going to get. Do they have standing? Have they been poisoned by the fake rib sandwich?
If you eat a McRib, that's on you.
I agree. And you know what? I saw a commercial this morning. Jack's is coming out with the same thing.
Their own version of
yes, it looks exactly like
sandwich.
It. It's pressed asshole into the shape of a rib patty.
I used to like a McRib. I'm not going to lie. I haven't ate one in years, and I wouldn't these days. I also loved the lunchroom version of the McRib.
God, you like square pizza too, probably.
I did like
the square pizza.
I was the person who gave away his square pizza.
Oh, no. You know what my favorite lunch day is? Because we're off the rails. the soup or chili day, because you can get the soup or the chili, and then the sandwich, the grilled cheese.
Yeah, the grilled cheese. The lousy grilled cheese sandwich.
God, I loved it, though.
That was not a lousy.
It was the best one available.
Different experience, but Cedar Bluff Lunchroom was top notch when I was there.
It was okay. I'm just finicky.
You're a picky eater?
I mean, I had to drink milk, and milk doesn't agree with me.
Ooh. Oh, I didn't drink milk. Yeah. No, but my favorite lunch was the Crispitos, specifically when they were leftover.
And look, that shows her age, because I didn't have Crispitos.
I don't know what she just said. I certainly don't have a spell.
I don't even know what those are until my kids were in school, and I was like, I'm not even sure what you're eating. What is this?
Is that somebody's version of chili cheese nachos?
No, Crispitos are like a little tiny rolled up burrito looking things.
Oh, okay, sure.
Like meat in them. And
all right, I could do that.
They would do them leftover like the next day, so they were crispier because they were reheated.
Yeah.
Delicious.
There are a lot of things that are better the next day reheated. A lot of things. But the McRib is not one of them, as we rotate back around to the original topic.
Hope Aeon Water Coolers is still with us after today.
Yeah. Now, what did you want to...
I just wanted to know if you guys like the sandwich or not. If you eat them, I think they're disgusting.
I used to.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to know.
I tried one and...
Yeah, me too.
I didn't like that.
McDonald's hasn't been hitting for me at all recently. Like, something's different.
I'm not mad at McDonald's. I like McDonald's. No, I eat there every once in a while, but that sandwich is a boil on the ass of humanity.
I love their coffee. They have great coffee. Mm-hmm. And I also will eat the breakfast?
Egg McMuffin.
Thank you.
Yes, I do like the McMuffin.
And then you can't beat their french fries.
See, I think they've changed the oil or something.
What?
Like, it's my taste.
I haven't tried them recently.
There's something different. Something's not.
Oh, no.
And I always like a small fry and a McChicken. Like, that's my McDonald's order.
All right, I got you.
They're both don't taste the same to me anymore.
I don't know.
Oh, I'm a little nervous now to go try some.
All right, somebody go out there and try the menu items that Katie likes and let us know if you sense the same thing that she does.
Oh, speaking of, can we talk just briefly about our primary sponsor, Easy Street?
If you would like to, as long as you want.
As I'm told, we got some good lunches coming up this week that are supposed to be delicious. And they're going with this Mardi Gras theme.
Makes sense.
Right now, because we are in Mardi Gras season, one of the best seasons
ever. When does it start, the 6th?
It's already started. We're in it.
Okay.
Yeah. It leads up to Carnival season, leads up to Fat Tuesday, which is what Mardi Gras means.
Gotcha.
And which is the Tuesday right before Ash Wednesday, if you are Catholic or Methodist.
Okay.
I think it's the 17th, Fat Tuesday, maybe.
Maybe.
It's the Tuesday after Valentine's.
Seems like something is on Friday, the 6th.
I don't know what that is, but it's not Fat Tuesday, because that's a Friday.
Okay. Yeah, I got that part. I know I'm new to this, but
so check out Easy Street this week for lunch.
Yes.
Anyway,
I know one day they were going to have gumbo. You may miss it by now. Mm-hmm. Red beans and rice one day. They're going to have several different
couple of weeks
dishes.
Just focus on those kinds of dishes.
Oh, God. It's the best season in the world now.
Okay, guys, to use an analogy that I'm going to completely wear out today, let's switch gears.
Okay. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Unintended. You've seen the name today, ladies and gentlemen.
It's only going to get worse.
I know.
All right, guys. So for just a minute, let's talk about iconic cars from the movies. Okay. Now, if you don't get the connection yet, you will before the day is over.
Mm-hmm. If you don't watch movies, I guess
Scott's we're going to walk. We're going to hold your hand, Katie. We're going to get you through this one. Okay. So it may seem like we've already driven this car off in the ditch, but hang on to the wheel. We're going to keep going. We're going to go back to the future before we're finished today.
Okay. All right.
So I Googled the top 5 movie cars of all time. And instead of coming up with my own list that I wouldn't have complained about, I used this list. And I'm mad because the black Trans Am from Smokey and the Bandit is not on the list. And I could have just made my own, but I'd rather bitch about this one.
Well, that's an iconic car.
Right? Maybe it's number 6 on the list. Anyway, the number five car on the list is the converted ambulance from Ghostbusters.
Aww.
The Ecto-1 from 1984. Surely all of these cars belong on the list.
I actually thought that was a hearse, but...
It's an ambulance. It's okay. A Cadillac, I think.
Oh, cool.
Back when everything was a Cadillac. Number four car on the list is the Ford Mustang GT from the 1968 film Bullet, starring Steve McQueen. Nothing but crickets in here. It's one of the most famous car chases of all times. You can pull it up on YouTube and watch the whole movie or just the 10-minute car chase. But it's iconic through the streets of San Francisco and out into the desert. There's a huge explosion. It's worth 10 minutes of your time if you like cars.
All right.
Does Lightning McQueen from the movie Cars get his name from Steve McQueen?
I would assume that he does.
I bet so.
It would certainly make sense because Steve McQueen was a race car driver.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
No, this car was a green Ford Mustang Fastback, and you're talking about...
No, I'm asking, is the car from the movie Cars on this list?
Is Lightning McQueen on your list?
Oh, no. No, 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 no. It's got to be an actual vehicle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. No fantasy cars.
Okay.
Or whatever. Well... You may disagree in a minute. Okay. The number three car on the list is the only car on the list that has a human name. Anybody want to take a stab?
Herbie.
There you go. Herbie the Love Bug. If not a heart of gold, then a carburetor of gold if you know your Herbie the Love Bug movies.
I love Herbie.
The number two car on the list, the shiny silver Aston Martin DB5 that made its cinematic debut in the 1964 James Bond film Goldfinger. And that set the... That set the tone for 60 years of Bond films. It had the machine guns out of the front and the ejector seat, gadgets. This was the first gadget car, and they just ran with that for the next 60 years. And then, of course, the number one movie car of all time, according to this list. Another shiny silver car, the DeLorean DMC-12 from the 1985 film Back to the Future.
Yep.
Told you guys we were going back to the future today. Nobody listens.
Is this where I tell you that I haven't seen Back to the Future?
Yes, it is, Katie. Thank you. She has never seen Back to the Future. We're going to tell you basically the whole movie today, so stick around.
I think I know the premise, but yeah, I haven't seen it.
That was one I wanted you to fill in that blank there, but...
Yeah. I don't know where I was going with that, but okay. I haven't seen it.
All right, I can't imagine, though, that even though Katie hasn't seen the movie, she knows what a DeLorean looks like. Everybody just conjured an image of a DeLorean, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, even six-year-old kids in the back of your SUV right now, when he heard DeLorean... He knew what it looked like.
I don't think six-year-olds listen to us.
Maybe not. Well, don't feel bad if you've never seen one or you don't know, because they only made about 9,300 of them before they shut down the factory.
Why?
We're getting to that.
Oh, is that the whole point of
today?
That's
the whole thing.
Why they shut down the factory.
See what you did there? Okay. And Kelly's on board.
Got it.
Okay, so but before we do that, we need to recognize our sponsors, and Kelly is going to read the first one right now.
I'd love to tell you about Cherokee Family Healthcare. They treat patients of all ages. You can call 256-266-1021 to schedule an appointment, or if you aren't feeling well, just walk in. The office is located at 819 West Main Street in Center, across from the post office. So whether you're suffering from a cold, the flu, aches or pains, or want to learn more about weight loss or preventative testing, you can make an appointment today by calling Connie Geimer and the staff at Cherokee Family Healthcare. Let me get you that number one more time. It's 256-266-1021.
Thanks to those guys right down the street for being a sponsor on
Love
the show.
Them.
They're
thank
signed in for the whole year. They're locked in for the year.
Well, thank you,
Connie.
So much.
All right. So just a note to mention, we're going to focus our attention right now on the guy who conceived the car that was the number one car on our list and why he thought it was such a great idea. And we'll focus on the links that he was willing to go to in order to try and get his dream car off the drawing board and into your driveway. He should have used that slogan.
Anyway, a good one, yeah.
DMC stands for DeLorean Motor Company. And the DMC-12 indicated that the car was supposed to cost $12,000, which is about what a Corvette cost in 1980-ish. In $81, actually, $12,000 is $43,000.
Corvettes are $43,000 today?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that $12,000 is $43,000.
Wow, they've come a long way, the Corvette.
Anyway, that was the plan. Katie, what were you thinking?
So it was supposed to be like a relatively like baseline car?
Well, no, it's supposed to be a sports car.
It's supposed to be
a sports car. It's supposed to be as nice as a Corvette. It's the same guy who would go and buy a Corvette, the middle-aged crisis guy, me,
but
would go and get this instead.
So, but that's an expensive car at the time?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a sporty...
Yeah, a sporty experience.
Not the bottom of the line, not base model. Mm. It's fancy.
This is not a Cutlass.
That's right. Did you have a cutlass too? I did.
No offense to the cutlass. It got me.
Ultimobile's out of business. My mother
had one, so it got me everywhere I needed to go. But
everybody else had the same thought about Oldsmobiles, so they shut it down.
Yeah. But it wasn't a sports car.
Not at all. So the name of the guy who had the plan to sell this car for $12,000, his name was John Zachary DeLorean.
Okay.
And before anyone asks, I'm thinking Katie or Kelly.
Oh.
Romanian, second generation Romanian is where the weird name comes from. I had to know.
DeLorean.
Oh,
okay.
And it means from the hills.
From the hills.
I don't know.
From Romania.
From the hills of Romania.
Got it.
Yeah, that's the long version. Maybe. Okay, so we're going to let you know a little bit more about this guy in the next few minutes. And really what you need to know right now is he was a car salesman at heart. And we all know that sometimes car salesmen say things that they don't exactly mean.
Yes.
Sometimes it's more a conjecture than fact, or more lie than truth. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's something to keep in mind. Okay. Raise your hand when you think he's a crook.
Okay.
Some of my best friends are used car salesmen, so don't think that I meant to read anything into that.
No,
we will, though, talk about the shitload of legal trouble that our friend John DeLorean gets into.
Okay.
Because he's trying to mass produce his dream car during a worldwide recession, using tens of millions of dollars loaned to him by the British government in what was then one of the most dangerous places in the world to try and live a normal life, much less build a car factory, war-torn Belfast, Northern Ireland.
Oh, wow.
I think I was supposed to say strife-torn instead of war-torn. Gotcha. But the Troubles, it was called. Between 1969 and the late 1990s, there were 3,500 fatalities, 50,000 injuries. Basically, it was the Catholics and the Protestants killing each other in the streets. The Catholics wanted to, they wanted Northern Ireland to leave the United Kingdom and become part of Ireland.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the Protestants, vice versa. They wanted to remain a part of the British crown.
They wanted all of Ireland to join the British.
Thus the Troubles.
Yeah.
There's one image that I watched. I started this episode 5 weeks ago, so I've had a lot of time to kill. I watched a video that shows during this time in Northern Ireland, in Belfast, there's this image of a soldier geared up, helmet, flak jacket, machine gun, and he's waddling across the highway, the street, trying not to be seen by the sniper that's shooting at him.
Oh, gosh.
And right behind him, out of the into the frame, comes a lady pushing a baby stroller.
Oh, my gosh.
Headed to the market, I guess.
Oh, wow.
That's how you live. That's how the people of Belfast, Northern Ireland live. Yeah. It was blowing up all around you, and you just tried to do your day.
You just had to live.
Yeah.
You had to get to the store.
That's where John DeLorean decided to build his factory.
Wow. And you know, there's still tension there today.
Mm-hmm.
We went on one of those tours there a couple years
ago.
You've
been there.
And our driver was, we were in Ireland, and he was driving the bus and stuff, we were asking him just kind of like, hey, where are you from? Trying to get to know him.
Right.
And he was telling us where he was from. And he said, it's up in the northern part of Ireland. He said, but not Northern Ireland. And that's exactly how he said it. And we were like, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Got it. Right.
Yeah.
So very, very.
Like we say, not Mississippi or not Arkansas.
Maybe not worse. Arkansas.
Lots worse. Yeah. Lots worse. All right. I'm going to get to the why that he made that decision to do what he did to build this factory there. But I mean, I know what you all are thinking, right? What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, lots. Mm. There's lots.
Since
why did he choose this place?
I'm getting to that.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I'm totally getting there. But you folks out there listening, you know that if you're listening to a true crime podcast, we're headed for bad news.
Yeah.
So buckle
up. It's on the horizon.
Big time. We are driving towards it.
Yep.
Arrival imminent.
Gear down. Slow down.
Oh, now I'm supposed to read Go Realty. Somebody hand me the Go Realty thing. It's my turn and I forgot. Sorry, Greg. Go Realty is another of our terrific sponsors. Greg is the owner and broker at Go Realty right here in Cherokee County. If you're looking for a home or property anywhere in Northeast Alabama or Northwest Georgia, call Greg at 256-504-3847. Greg has a full list of waterfront, residential, commercial, farm, and investment properties, and he's ready to help you find the dream of a deal that you are looking for. Greg has 25 years of experience in the real estate market, and you can see a complete list of his current properties by visiting GoRealtyAlabama.com or calling Greg at 256-504-3847. Thank you, Greg. All right, so today's episode of True Crime on Easy Street, as everybody already knows, is titled The Fall of John DeLorean. William Shakespeare himself would have loved to get his hands on this story. In fact, it kind of sounds like he wrote it. There's a documentary you can watch on YouTube where DeLorean tells an off-screen interviewer, yeah, I could have finished out my career at General Motors. I could have kept pushing someone else's ideas, marketing someone else's cars, and just collecting my enormous salary. But DeLorean had a dream. Mm. And this part of the story, I think when he started out, it was a legitimate dream. I think he really wanted to do this. But somewhere along the way, you're going to get suspicious of what's going on. We've all heard the phrase that the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yes.
Buckle up. I told you I was going to wear that out today. John DeLorean was a businessman who bent the rules. Of course he was. He made it all the way to the 14th floor at General Motors, and that's as high as that building goes.
Wow.
So when he got to the top, he was standing on a pile of people he had climbed over to get there.
Okay.
That's how that works.
And where was this located? Was this in America at the time?
He's in Detroit.
He was in Detroit.
If you wanted to be involved in that was the Silicon Valley of the day.
Yeah.
Back in the 40s and 50s, before we figured out computers, the place where innovation happened, where new things were being thought up and put on paper and spit out of a factory, that was cars.
Okay.
So he was involved in all of that back then. Like I said, he was the son of a Romanian immigrant. That was his father. His mother was from Austria. And somehow in his second generation in America, he became consumed by his own ambitions. And it turns out that a brilliant automotive engineer does not necessarily make a brilliant automotive CEO.
I gotcha.
Yeah, we've all heard of the offensive coordinator who got the head coaching job, and in 4 years he was back being an offensive coordinator again.
Yeah.
Some people just aren't cut out for it.
I'm looking at you, Mike Shula.
Take a number, Mike Shula.
Not even a Bama fan and had to come out with that.
That was nice. That's 25 years ago. That was well done. So we think that DeLorean's inexperience as the person in charge might have been something that helped. He got way too easy access to millions and millions of dollars that was somebody else's money. And in one case, a suitcase filled with cocaine. Katie looked up from her phone when I said that.
I'm going to need to know how we get to this.
We get to cocaine a lot recently.
Well, you know, I'm reliving my college days. That's as far as you know. So as we tell you the story of John DeLorean, just remember how high he fell from. He was just about as high as you could get. I mean,
it sounds like he wanted to go higher, though. He wanted to be the one in charge.
Oh, we're not talking about the cocaine. We're talking about building his own car.
Well,
I was just making sure.
Yeah.
John DeLorean was not your typical straight-laced auto executive. In an era of ultra-conservative suits, male pattern baldness, and interstate-wide neckties, John was tall, athletic, handsome. He was an engineer. He had a flair for the dramatic. He could market a car. He could build a car. He could design a car. He rose to fame in the 60s as the father of the Pontiac GTO. Basically what he did, he invented the muscle car. He dropped a big engine in a small car and sold the hell out of them.
Oh.
Ask you guys go home tonight and ask your fathers-in-law about the Pontiac GTO. If they didn't have one, they know somebody who did.
The Pontiac GTO.
Everybody had one. This thing had a 400 cubic inch engine. It was spitting out 350 horsepower. If you're not a race car driver, you don't need 350 horsepower. But it was making a lot of money for GM, selling these little small cars to young guys. And he was a young guy, so he got what they wanted. And he was able to build it and put it on the street, and they bought them.
Now, the GTO is different than, I'm guessing, the Grand Am, because I had a Pontiac Grand Am at one point.
Well, but probably all of those Grand Prix and the Grand, everything that came along was a product of, and John DeLorean had a hand in all of those. He built the Pontiac Grand Prix. He built the Pontiac Bonneville. I don't know if he wasn't still there when the Pan Am came along.
Grand Am.
He wasn't still there when that came along, but I'm sure that some of what he had done in the years when he was there.
Yeah, I had a Pontiac Grand Am GT. That was my first car.
Nice.
And the bumper flew off one day when I was riding down the road.
Oh my.
Your car must have rolled off on nuts and bolts day. There was a day when they didn't put all the nuts and bolts.
It was
in the
older
cars
than me, so I don't know.
I got you.
Oh wow. John DeLorean. Oh, wait a minute. Did they make a movie of him?
They've made several movies about this.
Okay.
Yeah. Alec Baldwin plays...
Let me tell you how dumb I am. I was looking at this image of him, and I was like, oh my God, he looks like Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, that's him. That's Baldwin as John DeLorean.
And that's him as... And then I saw that, story of John...
It's called Framing DeLorean, and it's very good.
All right.
If you want to learn a little bit more about this. So anyway, DeLorean was the young hip guy. Love him or hate him, he made GM a shitload of money. By 1972, John DeLorean was the youngest division head in GM history. He was running Chevrolet all by himself. He was earning a six-figure salary. Now, just for comparison, in 1972, $100,000 was worth $780,000 today. So figure he's making four times that. So he's making $2, $3 million a year. Equivalent of
inflation
in 72, big time.
And so he's not satisfied with this?
He's got a dream. Damn it.
All right.
So again, DeLorean was the black sheep of the GM family. Oh. He didn't dress the same way. He didn't act the same way. He dyed his hair. He got plastic surgery, gave himself a more prominent chin. He dated movie stars, wore his shirt unbuttoned to meetings. God forbid.
Oh, so this guy's a douchebag.
Maybe. Okay, Katie's suspicious. Katie just verbally raised her hand. I think he's a crook. For every person who loved John DeLorean on the 14th floor, there were four or five laying under him trying to breathe because he'd crawled over them. They all did. That's how executives get that high.
Yeah.
But for some reason in 1973, for reasons that remain mysterious to this day, he apparently quit General Motors. Some say he was forced out. But it doesn't matter. He's gone. He's got to find another way to gainfully employ himself. And he's like, darn it. I'm going to take that dream that I had in my head and I'm going to make my own car. He said that at one point, he says he got a promotion that he didn't like. He said it was like going from the quarterback on the field to the guy in the box who owned the stadium. He said he had been taken out of the day-to-day activities of building and marketing cars and he didn't like it. So he left.
Doesn't the guy in the box make more money, though, than the quarterback?
I guess, but if you like to play football, you're not ready to quit yet.
I got you.
I guess, Okay. So DeLorean walked away from possibly becoming the next head of General Motors. I mean, he was on the short list. There were five or six guys. We'll never know. Yeah. But there were five or six guys in line. He was one of those five or six guys. But he's going to go at 48. He's going to leave. He's going to go build his dream car.
Okay.
He founded the DeLorean Motor Company with a vision of an ethical sports car. It was going to be, he was going to take everything he had learned in the automotive industry and right every wrong. He was going to fix it. That's where his plan started. His new car was going to be safe. It was going to be long lasting. It was going to be covered in stainless steel. It's long lasting. It was going to be fuel efficient. He had the car designed by an Italian designer, and I'm going to try this.
Okay.
Giugietto Giugiaro.
Oh, all right. Perfect.
I've been practicing that for 2 weeks.
Yeah. What a great name.
Yeah.
He was an Italian car designer. Would go on to be, in 1999, he was named the Automotive Designer of the Century. For not only designing the DeLorean, he had also designed the Lotus Esprit, a car that looks very similar to a DeLorean, if you notice. And he also designed the Volkswagen Golf.
Okay.
So this guy was, his whole adult life, he was designing cars.
The Volkswagen Golf is not a sports car.
No, it's a boxy little, four-door thing. Yeah.
I thought I knew what you're talking about, but I was making sure.
I didn't know what it was either. But anyway, I tried the name. That's why I hate names. So, but
yeah, I think it's a great name.
Well, Steve Smith would have been a lot easier for me to pronounce than Giugietto Giugiaro. Anyway, I can tell you guys for a fact that the DeLorean was different from anything anybody had ever seen before. I'm sure the first time I saw one, my jaw hit the floor. In fact, the first time I dropped an F-bomb, it might have been when somebody showed me that picture and I said, "What the fuck is that?" Because I wanted
one.
In a good way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted one right away. Yeah. I mean, I still want one. Who doesn't want a DeLorean? I mean, even my shitty old DeLorean in my driveway is better than the one you don't have. I'll bet you if I had a party at my house tomorrow and said, "Hey guys, hot dogs, BYOB, and by the way, I've got a fucking DeLorean." Kevin Turner would come to that.
Sure.
Maybe even Jake Graves.
I don't know.
We'll never find out because I'm not going to have one. Anyway, and you know what we could do? If we did do that, we could invite all of the kids and leave the keys in it because everybody knows that nobody under the age of 35 knows how to drive a stick.
Can't drive
Katie,
it.
How old are you?
32.
Can you drive a stick?
No.
See what I mean? No. You can't either, Kelly?
No, I can.
You can, okay.
Yeah, no, I learned on one.
I barely can drive myself.
An automatic.
I mean, I say I learned on one. I really didn't, but I had
you could,
to.
You could escape from a from a mad scientist or from a dinosaur that was chasing you if all you had was a car with a stick transmission.
Yeah, my dad had a truck that was a stick shift, and we parked on a hill one day, and he's like, we're not leaving until you roll forward without going backward.
Right.
And
yeah, that's the first thing you have to learn. It would get yourself killed.
Took a minute.
Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. Yeah, dad took me down to the state docks between Cedar Bluff and Center.
Yeah.
And I sat on that incline until I could hold the car perfectly still.
And then
with
go
the gas
forward.
And the clutch only. Mm-hmm. And then move.
And then move, yeah.
Yeah, I had a friend in high school who taught me how to crank the car. Mm-hmm. I didn't know you had to put holding the clutch or whatever.
Right, right.
It takes your whole body to crank that car.
Yeah, and I got the car cranked, but that was like as far as we got. In the lessons. Okay.
And then she took her foot off the clutch and it lurched and went dead.
Yeah. You jerk forward and... Yeah.
And how does a short person do all that? Like, that's a lot going on.
Use that seat mover.
Yeah.
I can see how that would be cumbersome the shorter your legs get.
I love driving.
I did too. I miss it all the time.
It's fun.
I like to drive exclusively with cruise control on. Like, I drive mainly with my hands. I don't touch the gas pedal much at all.
Well, you had a Tesla for long enough.
I love the whole, like...
Yeah, me too.
Oh,
you're like, you're not riding in the car. You're driving the car when it's a stick shift. I love it. I miss it all the time.
Yep.
Okay, anyway. So I mentioned the stainless steel of the DeLorean DMC-12. The stainless steel that is used to make a DeLorean is the same stainless steel you have in your kitchen at home if you have a sink made of that equipment. That's the same grade. It's 304 grade stainless steel. It is corrosion resistant. It has a brushed finish. At the time when the DeLorean came out, the only thing that 304 stainless steel was used for was kitchen sinks and beer kegs.
Nice.
That was it. So if you're listening to this program and you've never seen a DeLorean and you want to know what one looks like, go to the kitchen, stick your head in the sink. That's it. You're looking at a DeLorean really closely.
If it's a silver stainless steel sink.
Yeah. I thought that went without saying, but you're probably right. I should have mentioned
There's
it.
A lot of sinks nowadays that are not that.
That's true. More and more,
kitchen.
Right?
Kitchen, yeah.
Yeah, and that porcelain and...
soapstone.
A lot of different things.
Yeah.
I just dated myself. That's how
old my
kitchen sink is. Anyway, so DeLorean was bound and determined, damn it, to build this dream car. Unfortunately, it was an experience that for him and a lot of other people turned into a nightmare.
Oh.
Sometimes desperate men resort to desperate measures, right? We've all heard that one. And that unfortunate fact of life is the reason we are all here today discussing true crime. So if we're going to continue to tell the story of John DeLorean, the next thing we have to do, we got to build a DeLorean. We got to have one.
Yeah.
So we need cash, lots of cash. Mm-hmm. We need a factory. Got to have 2,000 people to work in that factory. Because we're going to mass produce this car. You need a distribution network all over the United States and around the world. At the height of this operation, there were 350 dealers in the United States. Maybe not exclusively DeLorean dealers, but the local Ford place was going to also become a DeLorean dealer or whatever. There were 350 across the country. And every one of those dealers put in $25,000 towards the plant itself. So, and then they were going to, that's kind of a pre-order.
Mm-hmm.
That's their commitment that when you get these things rolling, we're going
to
sell them.
You're going to send some to us.
Right.
Okay. All right.
You think, like, I'm feeling this is not going to go well.
You're correct. It's going to be a horrible disaster.
Okay.
But that's the fun part. At least it was for me. So we've got to have a network of hundreds of suppliers in Europe to build all these parts. I mean, everything from leather seats to lug nuts has to be made and shipped to this factory where everything gets put together. That's how an assembly line works.
Mm-hmm. The thought of that is so overwhelming.
I know.
It's a lot.
I know. The more I dug, the more I thought, holy cow, how did they ever get as far as they got?
But he knew how to do this.
He knew how to do it.
His position.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He had worked his way up. He had worked at Packard, and then he got to General Motors, and he worked his way up in the company.
Yeah.
He knew how to build a car.
Yeah.
For sure.
Getting a car factory together has to be one of the most, like, overwhelming things because, like,
I can't imagine.
Elon Musk can barely do it, you know, like, with all the resources in the world, and they can barely get Teslas out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's tough.
all the resources in the world and a crap ton of American tax dollars.
Yeah.
Not to mention that.
Yeah. And like, I mean, like you can barely
and he still
get those kind of
struggles. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so keep in mind, on that note, keep in mind there had not been a successful launch of an automobile manufacturer in the United States since Chrysler in 1926.
Wow.
So when DeLorean was trying to do this, 50 years had passed since that had happened successfully. Packard, Hudson, Studebaker, Tucker, AMC, those were just a few of the manufacturers who went or came and went in that 50-year period.
Never heard of any of them.
Exactly.
I've heard of a Studebaker.
Yeah. Hudson, I remember them. They were big in the NASCAR.
Oh, the
back
Hudson
in the
Hornet.
The Hudson Hornet.
He was,
yeah.
He was in
that
Cars.
That car is in Cars.
Hudson
that was Paul
Hornet,
Newman,
the
right?
The old dude.
Didn't Paul Newman? Yeah. Was, yeah. Okay. That's right.
That's a movie I've seen.
One in a row. All right. Think of it this way. Like I said earlier, we jumped this. It was the Silicon Valley of its day. This is where stuff happened. So a lot of these guys failed for everyone that succeeded. So the process of constructing, were you going to say something? Go ahead. No. The process of constructing a new car from scratch typically was anywhere from a 5-year plan to an 8-year plan. DeLorean, the disgruntled former GM bigwig, said, hold my beer, we're going to do it in 18 months.
All right, let's do it.
Pretty audacious. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's big ideas. That's a big plan. That's a guy with a big ego. In fact, John DeLorean probably didn't say, hold my beer. He probably said, hold my pappies on the rocks.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He was raking in the
and
bucks.
Nothing less than 20 year.
Oh, yeah, 20 year for sure. So DeLorean's initial idea was to build his factory in Puerto Rico.
Okay.
That did not work out. A lot of other companies, countries were reaching out to him. There's one story that along this path, he was having phone conversations. Here's our Alabama connection with George Wallace.
How about that?
Who was the governor of the state at the time. He was trying to get the manufacturing plant in Alabama. It would end up being another decade before Bama was able to pull that off. We got the Mercedes-Benz plant in Vance over close to Tuscaloosa, but that was early 90s.
Yep.
But that process was underway a decade before, apparently. Over in the United Kingdom, they desperately wanted 2,000 jobs, and DeLorean was offering 2,000 jobs. Belfast, Northern Ireland was a war zone and unemployment was 40%.
Okay, so that makes sense why he ended up there.
Yeah. I saw an interview with one guy who was 26 years old from Northern Ireland. He got hired to work in the plant. It was the first job he'd ever had in his life.
At 26?
26.
Because he just couldn't find one.
There's no job. There's nothing. Nobody's building anything there because it's liable to be burned down when you get to work in the morning. No one in their right mind would build anything in Northern Ireland. But when the British government offered John DeLorean $75 million, and that's £75 million, which was $97 million at the time, it's about $800 million today.
Yeah.
So it's just about enough to build a factory, maybe.
Gosh.
But maybe not enough to, anyway, we're getting there. So John DeLorean is going to build his car in Belfast, Northern Ireland.
All right, let's do it.
He couldn't turn it down. It solved all of his problems with this. With one stroke of the pen, every problem he had was solved.
And people in this area are lining up to get a job.
As long as he doesn't mind building his car in a firing range, come on into town.
And but they're lining up.
Oh yeah,
for the job.
No, yes, these people
have a problem with that.
These people want to work. They hate their plight. They hate where they are.
Right.
They don't want to be there. This is disgusting and horrible. We don't want to have anything to do with it. We want a job, so we can support our families.
I think they want to live there. They just want it to be better, right?
Exactly.
Like they just want.
Yeah, nobody's leaving. They're staying.
Yeah,
there's just
that's
nothing
what I'm
to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So the first thing John DeLorean did, he promised to have the cars rolling off the assembly line in 18 months. Now, anybody in the auto industry who heard that did a spit take because that's impossible.
Right. And the people who knew him said
that
typical.
Idiot. Yeah. And that's really where we should have had the Aeon water cooler segment. Somebody should have done a spit take. Oh well. But it's impossible to do. Now, DeLorean's already said, though, I've got 30,000 cars coming, pre-sold in the United States, good-paying jobs. Nothing like that has existed for years in Great Britain. Everybody wins, right?
Sure.
DeLorean had his factory site, and he had the money to build it, and the British government was going to get 2,000 jobs. If this thing comes off without a hitch, the DeLorean DMC-12 is going to be the biggest thing to come out of Belfast since the Titanic.
Oh, yeah.
And we all know how that turned out.
I was about to say that. It's not a great list.
It's not a great list. Mm. Anyway, so those jobs were important to the British government because if those people have jobs, they're not out in the streets throwing Molotov cocktails at each other.
Okay.
Or firing from the church steeples at the little girl pushing her baby in a stroller or whatever.
Right.
One reporter said that at this time, Northern Ireland, Belfast in particular, was Dodge City in all but name. Here's a couple of facts. John DeLorean never spent a single night in Belfast in the 4 years he had anything to do with the place. He was scared for his safety. He flew to London every night and flew back the next morning.
What?
That's not even the craziest part. He also heard that former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger had a bulletproof raincoat, and he wanted one, and he got one, but it was so heavy he couldn't wear it.
I imagine.
So it's in the closet somewhere.
But he's taking a flight every day.
From London to Belfast.
This is the 70s.
I mean, that's probably like Atlanta to Birmingham.
Sounds cheap.
It's a 40-minute flight. But
right, yeah. but still, that's insane.
Well, you can't take the ferry?
Hey, he never got killed. It sounds like a pretty good idea now.
I guess airports weren't as big a deal to navigate.
You did walk right in an airport then.
Yeah, I'm forgetting. Yeah. I've never been in something like that.
Yeah, it's like going to the bus station. You just go in and wave your ticket on the way into the Skyway, and you're on the plane.
It's a world I've never lived in.
Yeah. Not for long for me. I think I flew twice before everything changed. Mm.
I think I flew maybe once before 9/11. Yeah.
All right. So everything happens. The paperwork gets signed. And it turns out that the very next thing that John DeLorean did was probably the dumbest thing he did. I'll leave that up to you guys at the end. But he took 17 million pounds of that 75 million pounds and he kept it.
Secretly. Finder's fee.
Something. He secretly split it with the guy who is going to build his car. Now, not the Italian who designed his car. The guy who's going to build his car is the guy who builds Lotus cars. Okay. His name is Colin Chapman.
Okay.
And they're going to split the money.
They split the 17 mil.
They split the 17 million.
They embezzled this money.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I think in their minds, they went ahead and paid themselves in advance for what they were sure was going to be a successful endeavor.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I'm sure that would be what they argued. I think I agree with Katie's summation better. but first of all, pretend I didn't tell you that.
Okay.
You don't know that yet.
All right.
Nobody knows about the missing 17 million until the whole house of cards comes falling down.
Okay.
And when it crumbled, there was a 9,300 car pileup on the interstate.
Oh, ha ha. But.
Sorry. More than a decade before O.J. Simpson and his white Bronco were the biggest story ever, John DeLorean and his shock of white hair was the biggest story ever. We toss around a lot. I know the phrase, the crime of the century. Mm-hmm. But this truly was one of those cases that at the time was the crime of the century when it happened. It was in the papers. Let's say that. Probably the first time I ever read the name DeLorean was on the front page of USA Today when I was 10 or 11 or 12 years old because I read USA Today every day. I loved it.
At 10?
Of course I loved it.
Wow.
It was a newspaper in color. My grandfather had sat in his chair every Sunday and read the Atlanta Journal. Mm-hmm. I finally had a newspaper that I can hold. It looked more like my speed. And I loved USA Today. And in 1982 and 83 and 84, John DeLorean was in USA Today and on CNN all the time. There's a story, in fact, that the guys who wrote the film Back to the Future, it was 1984, they were working on the script for the movie. And at one point, they decided that the time machine should be a car. And DeLoreans, they were all over the news. His name was all over the news. They thought, hey, why don't we make it a DeLorean? His name's in the news anyway. It's free marketing for the movie. And so that's what they did.
Oh, wow.
And there's a reason why they went with a car, and I'll tell you that later. But a lot of people went to see Back to the Future the first time because there was a DeLorean in it. Mm-hmm. They didn't. Nobody ever heard of Michael J. Fox.
Mm-mm.
Chris Lloyd. Who the hell is that?
Right.
It's being directed by who? Bob Zemeckis? He failed with used cars 4 years ago. He's out of the industry, we thought. But, so that was a draw. If you didn't know who Steven Spielberg was. But everybody pretty much knew who the executive director was.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway. That's how we got to Doc Brown's version of a DeLorean. Okay, so let's get started building this stainless steel dream of a car. There's a book titled The DeLorean Story by a guy named Nick Sutton who worked for DeLorean Motor Company. He was employee number 16. So that's some automotive companies. Your whatever number higher you are, that's your badge number. He was number 16. And Sutton said that DeLorean brought over the best engineers from America. They filled up this 191,000 square foot assembly plant in record time. They built it in record time, and then they started working in it in record time. And 191,000 square feet is the size of 70 tennis courts. I know that you guys play pickleball, so you're on tennis courts. So 70 of those, that's how big the factory was. It was in there. I didn't look that up. I don't know why they thought of tennis courts. Anyway.
Usually they do things in football fields.
Yeah, fewer of those. I mean, fewer than 70 of those.
Well, yeah, yeah, right.
Okay, so up to a point, everything's going okay. But in May of 1979, Margaret Thatcher got elected Prime Minister of Great Britain, and she hated everybody and everything. She learned it from Ronald Reagan. So she didn't care about the 2,000 jobs. She didn't care about the 50,000 injuries or the 3,500 dead people. She didn't want one dime of government tax money being spent for anything.
Okay.
She was one of those people who wants to make government so small you can drown it in the bathtub.
She's in a penny pincher, apparently.
It's one way to say it. So practically overnight, all of the goodwill that DeLorean had established vanished. The attitude.
Turns out, though, she might have been right about not giving him money.
Well,
right?
But she might have been the reason. Well, yes, but if they'd have kept going, it might have been successful.
Well, it might have been. It might have been.
We'll never know. All right, so by early 1980, Lotus, the Colin Chapman, our friend who's got half the 17 million pounds, he has built a car, and they're going to use that car to build the machinery that's going to allow them to mass produce it at the factory. So they've got it ready. They know what it's going to look like. In January of 81, the first production model of the DeLorean rolled off the assembly line in Belfast. And on the way out in the parking lot, it ran over a curb and broke the front suspension.
Who was driving?
I don't know. Some idiot. A former employee right after that, I'm guessing.
As in, like, it was a bad ordeal, or as in the car wasn't put together well?
That.
Okay.
I think maybe both.
Well, if you run over a curb and all that happens, then yeah, it's not put together.
Not good.
Because I hit a mini a curb most days.
Yeah, well, most cars don't fall apart when you hit a curb.
Yeah, I hadn't had one yet.
Maybe this is why. Maybe they thought, hey, we should make cars better.
Especially if you're marketing it to be a safe car.
Right. So a car that, there were many production problems immediately. A car that was supposed to take 50 man hours was taking 500 at one point.
Okay.
In February of 81, the plan was to be making 30 DeLoreans every day. They were making 12. Oof. So this venture is beginning to sound unsound financially.
You're going to have to sell it for more and make it a hot ticket.
Yeah. There you go.
Supply and demand.
That's what
make
you think.
It work for
there you.
You
go. And I'm sure John DeLorean was thinking that because he's a marketing guy. Nevertheless, despite the first car landing jelly side down when it rolled off the assembly line, the first shipment of cars to the States left on Easter Sunday of 81. That was April the 19th, if that's ever a trivia question. Headed to Long Beach, California. Hundreds of cars in this big car carrying ship. When the ship arrived, every fucking battery was dead.
Why?
Some of the doors wouldn't open. Oh. Some of the other doors, once they got them open, wouldn't close.
This is a dumpster fire.
The wheels on one side of some cars didn't match the other side.
Please tell me how this is Margaret Thatcher's fault again.
Look, every car comes off the assembly line with a few quirks in the beginning. I mean, come on.
You work on a square blaming Margaret Thatcher earlier.
Yeah, what did she do?
Look, you guys just ran with it. I didn't stop you.
That
you were so angry with Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah.
I just haven't liked her for a long time.
Well, I don't think she screwed up the DeLorean.
Yeah, that's other anger coming out. Just don't get me started. I was rooting for the Argentinians and the Falcons. It doesn't matter.
Oh, God.
So they had to hire get these crews, these stateside repair crews, when the cars came off the ship. Mm-hmm. They had to spend 2 weeks working on them so they could deliver them to the dealers.
How about more jobs? He just created more jobs.
That's one way to look at it.
Let's spin it positively.
Multiple countries.
That's one way to look at it. So the one good thing about the factory, though, was that the Protestants and the Catholics never argued. They left their religion in their lockers when they got to work. It was smooth going inside the plant for the whole time. Now, outside the plant was another story.
Okay, but they were able to, that's huge. Yeah.
Well, they wanted jobs so bad. They needed money, and they mm-hmm. wanted jobs. They didn't want to be recruited by the IRA to go fight.
Right.
They wanted a job.
Okay, that's huge. That is sure it is. There we go. We're looking at the positive.
Speaks well of the Irish,
yes.
I think.
Yes,
very
it
much.
Does. Yes, it does.
Anyway, so according to Nate Sutton, employee number 16, in his book, in 1981, between May and June, there were 10 firebomb attacks at the plant. Not really at the plant, but they just kind of bled into the over the fence or, you know, some... Mm-hmm. Some handmade bomb got thrown errantly, like Katie threw it and it went the wrong way. <Just kidding. laughs> Probably me, not Katie. Anyway, one of the firebombs caused about $400,000 worth of damage to one of the little small buildings on the factory grounds. And just to give you kind of an idea of what kind of person John DeLorean was, he turned in an insurance claim for 14 million pounds. So if you haven't raised your hand yet, it might be time.
Dang you, Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah. All right. This is off the rails. Now we are in the ditch. When the DMC-12s finally started rolling off the line in 81, of course, they crashed into a harsh reality. All of the things that I said. The car ended up costing about $25,000, which is about 90 grand today.
But you're going to sell it for 12 is what you're telling
me. No, I'm telling you now they're going to sell it for 25.
Okay, but he's
now it's
first...
the DMC 25.
Okay, I was going to say
they didn't change the name, but that's what it turned into.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
So more than double.
Yeah, or as Katie's husband Shane Givens would say, one star.
One star.
Okay, so these beautiful gull wing doors, even after being either coaxed to open or close, mm-hmm. whatever it was, they still leaked when it rained.
Oh, like the doors opened up
straight.
Yeah.
Gull wing door.
Like
just wings. Straight sideways.
Like the back of the Tesla.
I don't know.
They do like wings.
Like yeah, like the like my old like the Tesla doors used to.
Yes, the back of the I'm sorry. I thought you meant the back door, but you meant the side rear doors. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, gotcha. Yes, that. Exactly like those. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's where he got the idea. That's where Musk wanted to do that because of the DeLorean. I kind of made that up. I don't know if that's true or not.
We can't get inside his mind. Don't try.
Yeah, don't Google it. He'll know we're looking at him.
Not bring up Tesla again.
Yeah. So the stainless steel was a nightmare to keep clean. It had to be constantly brushed and, you know, what you do with your sink. I don't know. Somebody tell me my sink's a mess. Anyway.
I know that stainless steel shows all kinds of fingerprints and streaks. And mm-hmm. Yeah.
And considering the car's horribly underpowered engine, nobody was comparing it to a Corvette anymore.
Mm.
Remember DeLorean's Pontiac back in the 60s that had 350 horsepower?
Yeah.
The DMC-12 maxed out at 130 horsepower. A Honda Accord, basically.
Why? So it's not a sports car.
Correct.
But he's marketing it as a sports car. Why did he go for the smaller engine? Cheaper?
He could get a hold of them. He could get them. I forget. Some European manufacturer. I don't think it was Lotus, but somebody built this small engine, I think it was a V6 engine that fit in the weird space. The engine in a DeLorean is in the back.
Okay.
So it had to fit back there.
So it had to be a different, it couldn't be one of those big.
Couldn't just be a standard big ass engine.
Yeah.
No room.
Okay.
And one of the other reasons they did it was because that the car already weighed too much. They had to throw out the airbags. That was going to be one of the big deals. It was going to be the first car with airbags. But they threw those out to save weight and money.
Oh, this is before you had standard airbags.
Oh, yeah. Before anybody had an airbag. This was going to be the first car with it. Maybe not the first one, but.
Oh, I don't know. But yeah, no, that was not a thing.
Yeah, I don't need anything these days.
That's all right.
Seatbelts weren't a thing.
I'm bored and I have a lot of time to look around for stuff. So everybody wins. Okay, so there's a short period when everything seemed to be okay at DeLorean as the days went by. Things were getting better. The cars were getting off the assembly line quicker with fewer screw-ups.
All right, good deal.
But then the recession happened. The sales of the car cratered. There was a horrible snowstorm, a winter storm in North America that lasted for weeks. And it shut down car sales just right in the holiday buying season.
Yeah.
Huge deal.
Yeah,
for everybody, most especially if you're brand new, trying to get started, establish yourself.
You don't want
yourself
to go buy a car in a snowstorm.
No.
That's not even the first 25 thoughts that hit your mind.
No. So by early 1982, DMC is on the verge of receivership, basically bankruptcy. They needed 17 million pounds to keep the factory going. Irony of ironies.
Alanis Morissette, that's irony.
That's irony. Yeah, now we got one. Write that down, honey. Anyway, so by February of 82, The first major crack in the asphalt has revealed itself. 1,000 employees laid off. Oof. Whatever good times had existed at the DMC plant in Belfast are coming to an end now.
Yes. And now the Irish are very upset with him.
Yes. And the financials, actually, the Irish mostly supported him. They blamed the British government.
They blamed the
like
British
I did.
Government. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
We see where you got it now.
Yeah. I'd rather throw my rocks at Parliament than one guy just standing there.
Then
so
the
DeLorean
guy who stole the
well,
money
we don't know that yet.
Oh yeah, we don't.
We don't know that.
We don't
yet.
Know that yet.
So DeLorean at this point is turning to increasingly shadowy sources for funding because the government's not giving him anymore.
Enter a case of cocaine.
You're getting there,
right?
Yes, okay. He's going to get into the cocaine business allegedly.
It's pretty lucrative.
Is he shipping
hear?
It in the little.
Well, he doesn't get that complicated. Well, he didn't get the chance to. He might have. We'll never know. In early October of 1982, there was paperwork on John DeLorean's desk that he could have signed that would have given him a $10 million loan from a legitimate investor.
But he needed 17.
I guess that's why he didn't sign it. Instead, he got on a plane and he flew to Los Angeles to meet with a bunch of guys he did not know.
Seems like a solid decision.
Desperate men. Desperate measures.
DeLorean is kind of known for his solid decision-making.
Mm-hmm. The exact date that John DeLorean and his stainless steel gull wings flew too close to the sun was October the 19th, 1982. The sun, in this case, was a suitcase filled with 50 pounds of cocaine. Oh, yeah. If you would like to see that suitcase, Google it on YouTube. He's sitting right in front of it. You can't miss it. You can watch him. You can watch John DeLorean reach into that suitcase and hold up his Faustian bargain, and he literally says, this stuff is better than gold.
All right.
And then the agents come in and handcuff him. Literally. It's right there on the film.
Are they spying on him? Or
yes, it was a sting. It was a whole setup.
The whole thing was a sting.
He had been on the phone with people for weeks, setting this thing up. And he finally got up the nerve to do it. He made that decision at the $10 million that I can sign for right now or hop on a plane and fly out to Los Angeles and get away with it.
$10 million legitimate.
Yeah. It wouldn't have been enough.
No.
And he would have probably ended up, like Katie said, he'd have had bricks of cocaine shoved into those DeLoreans, sending them overseas and everywhere. That would have turned into his drug delivery system. Mm-hmm. Possibly. We'll never know.
Where my brain went immediately.
Yeah. So DeLorean, before the cop comes in, before the agents come in, he thinks he saved his company. He thinks that this time his decision to do the wrong thing really was the right thing to do. Because the DMC-12 had been his dream for decades, right? Mm-hmm. Or a decade. And there he was in the Sheraton Hotel at the Los Angeles airport. If it's ever a trivia question, it was room number 501. I can't imagine it will be. Not now. And then they took him downstairs and they shoved him into a patrol car. That was a Chevrolet. No matter what a jury ultimately decides about John DeLorean, his reputation is destroyed at this point.
Yes.
That's all over the paper. That's on USA Today.
Mm-hmm. I have a question.
Sure.
So you said this was a sting operation.
That's right.
And were they following DeLorean? Did they suspect him of things?
He came right to them.
But I mean, they've set up a sting operation.
Right.
I'm not sure.
So here's what happened.
How are they targeting people? Because normally when they set up something like that, they have a target in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Was he their target?
You should have been a defense counsel, it turns out.
Yeah, because that doesn't make sense to me.
I know. It didn't make sense to 12 people on a jury either.
Okay. Yeah, it really doesn't.
So the one thing that DeLorean wanted his whole life, he always said, one day, I'm going to have my picture on the cover of Time magazine.
Oh, and he did.
And on November the 1st, 1982, when he did, the word busted was right beside his face.
We are at three ironic things, Alanis.
Yeah, write this down.
Redo the song.
The U.S. government alleged that John DeLorean had agreed to bankroll a $24 million drug smuggling operation to save his company. The footage came from the cocaine swap. I mean, hell, that's the smoking gun. He did it, right? There he is holding it.
Yeah.
But the story is a little bit more complex than a few seconds of grainy video footage. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to 1984, and that year's trial of the century was underway in April.
Yep, here we go.
His drug trial began. It was all over the news, of course. I guarantee you it was on the front page of USA Today. You guys remember in the 80s, Nancy Reagan, first lady, her most famous three words.
Just say no.
No, it's not tonight, Ronnie.
Oh, I thought it was just
no. It is just say no. Yeah, you stole my joke. Anyway, the U.S. government, at the direction of her husband, was perpetrating the war on drugs in the early 1980s, and they needed a high-profile bust to get the whole thing started.
Ooh, and here we go.
There is a contingent of dedicated DeLorean disciples who believe to this day that the U.S. and British governments conspired to entrap John DeLorean. And 12 people who agreed with that, jurors.
Yeah, well, I don't know about, I mean, I guess the entrapment, that it does sound like entrapment to me, because I'm just trying to figure out why John DeLorean, or if he just stumbled upon this random sting operation they have sitting there.
Normally
you set up a sting operation because there is an issue.
Right, like they've already done it several times.
Like I know that this is a drug empire. Mm-hmm. I just got to prove it. So I'm going to set up a sting operation. But this was the first time he had done something like this.
Well,
I mean, he had done other things.
I see what you're saying. The thing is, the person who roped him into the sting operation.
Yes.
Already had a sting operation going with the FBI and another drug dealer. And so they just kind of pulled John into this and said, hey, by the way, if you want to make some money, we've got a deal going on over here. And that's when John stuck his nose in, and that's when the whole thing got shut down. So it wasn't set up initially to capture him.
Right. It's going on over here for another reason.
He walks into the middle of it.
And then they, okay.
Yeah. Remember.
I don't like that.
No one knows about the 17 million yet.
I know. Even knowing about the 17 million.
Or at least nobody can.
This is weird.
There are beginning to be rumblings because the company's come apart now. The factory's shut down. People are going through the books. The British government is going through, and they're starting to say, hey, wait a minute. Where's this stuff? So it's made the news a couple of times, but nobody's gotten to the bottom of it yet.
Yeah.
But he's starting to smell a little.
Well, he really got the spotlight on him when he the cocaine really.
Yeah. That was
the
big spotlight.
But you're saying that the jurors all did not. They found that was entrapment, and
that's
they didn't
right.
like that. So he didn't. He was found not guilty.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yep. Over the course of that 4-month trial, the defense team successfully argued that their client had been entrapped. They proved that the investors he thought he was meeting with were actually FBI agents. Who had targeted him in a moment of extreme financial duress.
Yeah, I agree.
Evidence showed that the informants had even threatened DeLorean's family when he tried to back out before the sting thing. Despite the incriminating video, the government saw right through it. They said, nope, that's entrapment. We're not going to hang him out to dry for that. You manufactured this crime to entrap him.
Absolutely.
And you can't do that, right, Katie?
Yeah.
You can't create a crime.
Yeah,
no, that is illegal.
Yeah. Well, he got out.
I agree with this decision.
In August of 1994, the jury returned a verdict of not guilty on all 8 counts.
Yeah.
In the TV news footage of DeLorean outside the courtroom, after the verdict was read, he almost looks shocked that he's not wearing an orange jumpsuit.
Well, I'm sure he did.
When someone behind the camera shouted to ask him what he was going to do next, DeLorean chuckled and said, would you buy a used car for me?
No.
And I even left out the part about pornographer Larry Flint and his involvement in all of this.
Well, why?
Google it. You'll just have to look it up.
Are you kidding me? It would take
20 minutes to tell the whole thing.
How was he? Give me the bullets.
He got a hold of the FBI video. The FBI released a very short version of the video that just showed John saying this stuff is better than gold.
Yeah.
Well, the whole thing that they never released to anybody, Larry Flint got a hold of. You know, he had won the Supreme Court, First Amendment case.
Yeah, he did.
So he had become a voice for the First Amendment in the 70s and 80s, and that's on my list too. But that when he got that tape, it made the news when he threatened to release it. Mm-hmm. And that's when I didn't read too far down the road, but eventually it came out and it made its way into the media, and that supposedly had some influence with the jurors as well.
He helped him get the verdict.
He helped get the truth out. That's what Larry Flint said. I don't care if it convicts him or not.
Yeah.
But they're not showing you everything, and here's the rest of it.
Okay.
That was his thing.
I mean, all right, yeah.
Unfortunately for John DeLorean, His legal woes did not end right there.
Yeah, because now we've...
Criminal fraud charges.
Yeah.
He was acquitted of those as well.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Way to go. $10 million lawsuit for unpaid attorney's fees.
Oh.
And lawsuits from dozens of investors, among them Sammy Davis Jr., Hee Haw co-host Roy Clark, and Johnny Carson.
Why would
Google Johnny Carson DeLorean. Just Google it.
Okay.
I don't know if they... sued him, if they were among the ones who sued him, but they were investors. Sammy Davis Jr. and Johnny Carson both put in $500,000.
Holy moly.
That's what they said. At that point, the downfall of John DeLorean was total. He lost his Manhattan apartment, a 430-acre estate in New Jersey. Mm. He also lost his wife and two kids. Which that's another whole story that I didn't even get into. DeLorean spent the rest of his life dragged through dozens of legal battles. He declared personal bankruptcy in 1999. Still, DeLorean tried his best to remain upbeat. He said once, "I have made millions in my life and I have lost millions, and half the fun is getting it all back."
Hmm. Well, there you go. He did stay upbeat.
His ex-wife called him a malignant narcissist.
Sure she did.
And one of his friends got quoted after all this happened, and he said, "John DeLorean got caught being John DeLorean."
Okay.
That sounds like it.
Sounds right. Not just a narcissist, a malignant one.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so as we kind of wind down here today, guys, and just as we send John DeLorean to the scrapyard of automotive obscurity... Wow. The July 3rd, 1985 release of Back to the Future turned John DeLorean's failed experiment into a silver screen success story.
Yep.
And that almost didn't happen, like I told you before. So Bob Zemeckis and Bob Gale, the two Bobs, Gale was the screenwriter. They had originally decided that the time machine in the movie was going to be a refrigerator.
That's so lame.
I know. If you've ever seen, and I know Katie hasn't, but maybe some of the others of you have, if you've ever seen the 2008 film Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull,
yes,
they recycle the refrigerator trick at the beginning to save Indy from a nuclear blast because it's a lead-lined refrigerator.
It's a lead-lined, yeah.
Anyway, they kept that for 25
years. And I mean, there's no way he would have survived that blast. Refrigerator got blasted.
I think that was just a nod to Bob and Bob.
Yeah, a mile down the road, guys, and rolled. Yeah. And
we figured out what to do with your refrigerator. Does stop his leather jacket.
Indiana Jones, who's now, I don't even know how old the guy is at the time.
Too old for that. Anyway, in April of 84, when they were finalizing the script, DeLorean was in the news every day. They decided, hey, why don't we make the time machine a car? It'd be easier to move it around.
Yeah. Good idea. Whoever had that idea.
And then they said, hey, DeLorean, in the news. DeLorean.
That's diabolical. That's how it happened. I mean, really, it is, because it doesn't matter what kind of publicity he's getting.
I know.
It's right.
So with that simple question and answer, the DeLorean DMC-12 became, according to our list, the most famous movie car in history.
And then you also had, if you had a male version, after this movie, if you had a male version of America's Sweetheart at the time,
yeah,
it would have been Michael J. Fox.
Oh, of course.
Absolutely.
So, yes, yeah, everybody loved Michael J. Fox.
It was a great recipe.
One last thing, and then we're done. Okay. So we talked a minute ago about the underpowered DeLorean DMC-12 with 130 horsepower.
Yeah.
The inside joke was, you got to go 88 miles an hour to make the time machine work. The DeLorean won't go 88 miles an hour in real life. So that's the inside joke that anybody who knows the DeLorean, I mean, it might get up to 88, but
it's gonna fall apart.
It needs a steep hill and a lot of room.
So
the V8 engine only pumped out about the V6 engine, 130 horsepower. So it didn't go fast enough to be the time machine. So you may as well just keep the refrigerator and push it off a building. When that's only going to work once.
Yeah. So what happened to DeLorean? What did he do after all this?
After the movie came out in 1985, Bob Gale got a letter in the mail, and it was from John DeLorean. He said he had just seen the film and he thought it was wonderful. It was a very nice letter.
Okay.
He was so proud and so honored and touched that they had appreciated his contribution to the automotive industry enough to use it in their movie.
Oh.
I don't know if they told him it was just the...
No.
It was the Gullwing Doors dummy. On the day of my 35th birthday, March the 20th, 2005, two things happened. Katie Beth was still contemplating what to ask for her 12th birthday, which is 6 months away. And the money section had a headline that said John DeLorean dead at 80.
Oh.
At the time of his death, DeLorean was in a one-bedroom condo in Morristown, New Jersey. He was selling watches on the internet and working on building his next car company.
Still.
So it turns out that this particular iteration of the American dream consisted of an Italian-designed car.
Yep.
Assembled with French parts.
Yep.
By Irish workers, by money from the United Kingdom. With an intended bump along the way from Mexican drug money. That is not how you build a car, everybody. But that is how you are able to fall from as high as you did.
That's how you're...
If you are John DeLorean.
Well, that's how you building a car ends up on a true crime podcast.
Right? That is correct.
It's a perfect recipe.
And I forgot to let Katie do the commercial for Cherokee...
Well, we can tell you all now.
Let's do it.
Here we go.
Don't forget, when you're planning your 2026 staycation, that you need to check with the Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce, because they have everything you need there. They can show you a complete list of the terrific area attractions, cozy lodgings. We got creekside kayak rentals. Basically everything. Just go to cherokee-chamber.org.
All right. We should do that every time. I like that.
Yeah.
Kind of do the last one on the way out.
I love it.
All right. Well, reach out and say something nice about us on your podcast platform of choice.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and then email us at truecrimeoneasystreet@gmail.com or check out our website, truecrimeoneasystreet.com.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Is that it? Anybody else? Katie?
That's all I got.
Are we done?
Yep.
Good night, everybody.